I strongly believe in macroeconomics and the fundamentals. So if you, you know, you talk about multifamily, for instance, you know, there is a shortage of 6 million units in the country, you know, today. And where are people moving?
Welcome to the Rent to Retirement Podcast, your resource for passive real estate investing and retirement strategies. If you're new to real estate or planning your financial future, you're in the right place. Join us at renttoretirement.com to find your path to financial freedom and an easy, carefree retirement. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Rent to Retirees, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode. I am joined today by Dave Walcott. He is the founder and CEO of Pantheon Investments and author of The Holistic Wealth Strategy, a framework for building real wealth and living an extraordinary life. Dave, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet, Adam. Really grateful to be here to connect with you and your audience.
Well, fantastic. It's great to have you. I always like to just start off with the bare basics. You know, when did you start in real estate? What was your first investment?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, maybe I'll just go back a little bit more and give a little bit of context, but, you know, to my journey. But, you know, I grew up in a middle-class family in Connecticut, wasn't really exposed to real estate much or investing, and was told that the recipe for success was to go to school, get great grades, you're going to get a job, everything's just going to work out, right?
Great.
So I kind of followed down that path. Yeah. And I did the ROTC program in the Marine Corps, had the opportunity to serve my country after college, which was a phenomenal experience. Became combat tested, worked with some great people, traveled the world, and learned some things really in the military that they don't teach you anywhere else, things such as leadership, teamwork, and integrity. After I transitioned out of the Marines, I got into corporate America, working kind of in the tech industry and doing some supply chain work. And really, Adam, after a couple of years, I started to get, you know, pretty quickly frustrated with the whole corporate machine and, you know, bureaucracy and the way things worked there. And shortly at the same time, really, my wife and I started building a family. We had an 18-month-old toddler. And then on October 24th, 2000, we had triplets. Ooh. And literally quadrupled the size of our family, which was a complete shock to us. So the first thing I did, right, was I went to see my financial planner. And, you know, and he told me the same thing that they had all been telling me, which was, hey, just, you know, max out your 401k, dollar cost average. Oh, and for the kids, you could just set up 529 programs, right? And these are great, right? And keep in mind, this is in 2000, before there were great podcasts like this, a lot of resources. Rich Dad, Poor Dad had literally just come out, I think, a year or two before that. So I really got set out on this journey of then figuring out how the top 1% were really building their wealth, because I knew it wasn't as a retail investor in the stock market. So just became really obsessive on this journey, Adam, and then started investing in everything, all kinds of asset classes at that point in time, retail, raw land, looked at single family, looked at multifamily, you know, look at office, invested in office and retail, even oil and gas and other alternative asset classes as well. And, you know, really kind of, you know, moved over. If you remember, you know, Kiyosaki's, you know, cash flow quadrant, right? I moved over to the I side to become really a professional investor. And I also built a business. I built a tech consulting business. And there I learned a lot about taxes and scaling and growth and such. So bringing that, you know, fast forward to today, I really created Pantheon as a way to take all of these learnings that I had over the past 20 years about how to really build wealth in this alternative fashion, and then kind of package it into a systematic way that really anyone could kind of take advantage of.
Yeah. So what was the first, you know, real estate transaction you did? Other than a primary home, what was your first real estate investment?
Well, it started, it's interesting because, you know, going back to that time, right, I was gung-ho on getting into real estate. And I could remember to this day, Adam, right, like I had my W-2 job. And then in the evenings, we're looking at rental properties, my wife and I, with an 18-month-old toddler and then babies in the back, and we're like giving them lollipops to bribe them, you know, while we're trying to interview houses, and then crunching the numbers at night. And, frankly, I had a really challenging time with getting into kind of paralysis by analysis, right? And looking at all these numbers and understanding that, you know, you're competing with people who are doing this day in, day out. They understand all the ins and outs of the market, right? So I was actually a little bit, shy or slow to start in terms of buying my own thing. And that's what got me into really passive investing, you know, into syndications. So my first investment was into an office park in Dallas, Texas. I got into office and then I think retail. Later on we do have a single family property overseas. But that was really my first venture because I figured I learned a lot that, you know, by leveraging a team, right? You've got a professional acquisitions person, you've got a professional asset manager, who really understands, you know, everything around the asset that you're trying to purchase.
Now, you mentioned the paralysis of analysis. Was there something that you read or saw or did that allowed you to kind of break that paralysis and join it? Was it just that you met the right person, you read the right article? What was it that, you know, bumped you over that edge?
It was really making... Yeah, it was really making that, you know, transition to going into passive, quite frankly, or, you know, the model that you guys have, for instance, right, partnering with someone like you guys, it's the same thing, right? All of that value that you create, versus me as a part-time job trying to figure out, you know, are my rent appreciation forecasts correct? Are all these, because if you have one assumption that doesn't pencil out or is incorrect, you know, you're upside down in the property. And it's a big investment, right? So I think the big revelation that I had is, you know, it's all about the team, right? And you need to surround yourself with complete experts that are going to get you to that next level.
So you mentioned you have a property overseas. And when you talk about building a team, how do you build a team overseas? I mean, it's probably similar to how you build it across the country. But how did you learn to navigate, foreign markets?
Yeah. So, I'll tell folks that, I mean, this is kind of an interesting story and really ties to in my book and the holistic wealth strategy is, you know, the first thing that we talk about in the wealth strategy is actually creating a vision for yourself, right? Understanding, you know, where is it that you want to be? What do you want to be doing? What do you want to have, you know, and really, you know, really get clarity on that. Because if you don't have a target, you're going to miss every time, right? So my wife and I, part of our dream was to have a place in Italy that we could go to and not be, you know, we didn't want to be tourists traveling around with suitcases, bouncing around from hotel to hotel. I've traveled internationally a lot and I just, you know, I love the culture. We thought it would be a phenomenal experience for our family to, you know, learn another language, you know, visit different countries and things like that. So our first trip over there, you know, we went with the intention to, you know, house hunt and to figure that out. So we stayed at an Airbnb the first time, and this is actually going back 11 years now. And it ended up meeting the hotel owner. His son was a realtor, and he worked with a lot of international folks. He spoke English really well. And he was really our primary team member and still is to this day. We've actually bought three properties there in the same town over the past 11 years. But having someone local on the ground to figure out, help you with all the nuances from, you know, taxes to closing and in another country, there are a lot. You know, there are a lot of surprises. So I think, you know, having someone who's has the right values, has the right alignment, you know, is very key. So that's what we did.
Nice. Now, when you got started, I mean, you must have only been one or two or three, maybe years into your investing journey when the Great Recession happened. How did you get through that? What led you to continue your investing journey as you saw that? And the reason I want to bring that up is a lot of people are still concerned about what's happening today. I mean, I've talked with people recently where they're talking about a crash, and I haven't heard it as much in the media recently, but you know, people are still concerned that there's going to be, you know, decent downturn. So how did you power through investing while there was the downturn going on?
So it's all about creating a strategy, Adam. You know, and, you know, we just had actually on our podcast just had Michael Sonnenfeld, the chairman and CEO of Tiger 21. And the average net worth is 100 million per member. And they have over 1200 members. Right. So when they look at asset allocation, they're making decisions on a long term basis. And you're trying to think about it in terms of buckets. Right. And they're allocating around a percentage around real estate. They have about 25% in real estate. They've got about 20-25% into private equity. And the rest can be businesses, you know, investing in businesses. So when you kind of think about things in terms of a strategy and then overall buckets of money, then you can really kind of diversify yourself and then start to hedge. So for me, you know, for instance, I was diversified in different asset classes. I had invested in oil and gas. I did have some equities exposure at the time. I didn't have everything in real estate. And even to the extent of, you know, looking at my real estate holdings today, we're diversified across different markets, different operators. Different asset types, class A, class B, right? Larger properties, smaller ones, and different demographics, right, within those markets. So I think you can diversify, you know, quite well. And also, you know, I strongly believe in macroeconomics and the fundamentals. So if you, you know, you talk about multifamily, for instance, you know, there is a shortage of 6 million units in the country, you know, today. And where are people moving? You know, I just moved to Florida recently and, you know, the growth is just, it's extraordinary here.
Yeah, you and one or two other people move there.
Exactly. Right. So you see these, you know, net migration patterns of places like Florida, Texas, Arizona, right? The Carolinas, huge influx of people coming in. And then I think you can just, you know, try to make your investments a little bit more recession resistant, you know, by, you know, investing, you know, where the puck is going.
Yeah. So when it comes to analyzing a market, what are some of your favorite metrics to look at? I mean, obviously population growth is one, as you just mentioned, but what other things are y'all looking at whenever you're, you know, looking to see what market should we go into next or should we stay in this market?
Yeah. So, I mean, good question, but what's interesting is the first thing that we look at, it's really the team and the values of the team. And so, you know, after being an entrepreneur for almost 20 years myself and running different businesses, you know, you could present a great pro forma and pitch deck that looks fantastic on paper, but is that team going to be able to execute on that property, right? So that's what's super important. It's kind of like the philosophy of betting on the jockey rather than the horse. Right. So we start with understanding the team is a key thing. And then, of course, you know, in our due diligence process, we'll look at all of the other, you know, key areas that you would expect. Definitely market, like we said. Right. And there's so many sub markets within sub markets. Right. Real estate. Right. Is that way, you know, and I think everyone's familiar with that, but really making sure that, so for instance, you have diversification within industries, you know, if we're doing 150 unit, apartment building, and you're in, let's talk about Las Vegas, for instance, right? you've got a lot of exposure because the majority of the industry there is in entertainment. So if we have, you know, recessionary times, right, what's the first thing people are going to cut back on spending there, you know, there? But some of these other markets, you know, you talk about like Dallas or Austin, for instance, and there's so much diversity between, you know, military, between tech, you know, manufacturing, all these different industries. So, and if people have their jobs, they're going to be able to pay rent, you know, keep the economy going. So, so I think that's really important, industry diversification. And then, like I said, looking at those migration patterns, you know, is it a state that's growing or retracting, right? And all of this data is fully available, by the way, you know, for free, right? There's some great data and metrics that you can get around that. So I would say those are some of the top ones.
Do you have any websites you want to throw out there for people to that you use for that? I mean, I know census.gov a lot.
Yeah, Yardi Matrix is a good one, using Yardi. And then also some of the brokers like Marcus and Millichap. They give really good ones. And I'm also referring primarily to multifamily because that's kind of you know, our focus. We don't, you know, we're not really doing single family rentals. We're mostly in multifamily. So there's a lot of good independent reports from, you know, places like that.
Yeah. Now you mentioned, you know, having the team and how that's so crucial. What are some of the big questions you ask your potential teams to make sure that they're the ones that are a good fit for you?
Well, so for one thing, it's track record. You know, what does their track record look like? And, you know, to your point earlier, some people haven't even been through a recession yet, right? They may be very young in their business or something. So, you know, we really like to have experienced teams that, you know how to manage in good times as well as bad times, because there are going to be issues. You know, any business is going to have issues. So how are you going to manage through that? So I think that's a key thing, really understanding the track record for the people. And another important thing that I think a lot of people really overlook, but quite frankly, it's values. You know, do you align with the partners and the team in terms of values? Like, how responsive are they in terms of communication? How transparent are they in their communications? And you know, do you feel really trusted, you know, with that team? Because, you know, every dollar of precious capital that you invest as an investor, you know, has to be treated, you know, like absolute the gold that it is. Right. So you need to be sure that you're getting that level of treatment, that you're aligned in terms of values. And, you know, just like other businesses, there's, you know, some people in the space that might not be as well aligned, right, to your, you know, to your objectives. So we always like to have a mutual investor alignment. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things that y'all target is, you know, you mentioned it earlier, multifamily, real estate, oil and gas, self-storage. I know y'all do some with manufactured homes. Is there, out of those that you have there, are there any industries that you look at today and go, that it's just not the right time to get into that? You know, you might need to wait a little while, or it's the absolute right time to get in. I know you mentioned there's, I think, 6 million multifamily homes that need to be built, but like, you know, you look at oil and gas and you've seen some significant rises over the last few years. Is there anything that you've seen that you think is either played out or is about to kind of boom?
Yeah, I mean, great question. And, you know, all of these asset classes, right, are cyclical. And to be a savvy investor, you want to be paying attention of the cycles. We've been very cautious in multifamily this year. I think the market really probably peaked in terms of cap rates around January 2022. But there's still this leveling off of, you know, buyer and seller expectations. you know, what a buyer thinks they can get for a property and what a seller is willing to pay. There's still a lot of demand, but I think once we get to a place, you know, where that really levels off, then, you know, we'll start to see kind of more transactions. So I think multifamily right now has been very, we've been extremely cautious. But there are deals that are happening still every day. People are looking at things. So, and I think that there's going to be a nice window of opportunity probably going into 2024 around multifamily, right? Especially some of those distressed assets that were, maybe they were underwritten 3 years ago with bridge debt and, you know, their loan is coming due. And, you know, they didn't underwrite to the interest rates that we have today. And some of those properties just, you know, are just not performing. So there's going to be some, I think, some fantastic buying opportunities there going into next year. On the oil and gas side, and, you know, I'll speak to these two sectors because those are our primary sectors. You know, in energy was really interesting because after the pandemic, you know, oil prices cratered. And there really wasn't any investment in the sector for a couple of years, right, because of that. So now we're at a place where demand continues to grow at a global level. And you're also seeing that, you know, the supply has just not, you know, completely kept up with that, right? Nor the infrastructure to be able to get that out, because when you're looking at, you know, oil and gas, right, to be able to mine it and everything, the infrastructure lead time is significant, right? I mean, you have to be, you know, mining and drilling different operations for a long time, right? And understanding. Exactly. So I think, you know, now is actually a really good time in the sector. And we've been seeing some, you know, some good buying opportunities, some good assets being created. And of course, what's really exciting about being in the energy sector and oil and gas is you get tax efficiency where you can offset your active income. So if you're a W-2 earner, you can, you know, 100% of your investment is offset by an oil and gas investment. Unlike in real estate, right, where we're offsetting our passive income with those passive losses. So this is a great strategy that a lot of high income earners use to invest in the energy sector.
Yeah. So what are some of your biggest, like, if you can think back at your, what you've done so far, what's your biggest home run that you've hit and what's the worst strikeout you've taken?
So in terms of like the investments and everything that we've done,
the deals that you've come up with and move forward on.
Yeah. So we actually have a credit fund right now, which is super interesting. It's actually private credit. So this industry has gone from zero to $25 billion in the past 15 years and continues to rise. And this is actually another opportunity right now, right, as banks keep tightening lending standards and can't lend to small businesses. So what this private credit does is instead of going to a bank, let's say you have a restaurant owner in your neighborhood, right? And they have four different locations. They're doing really well and they want to create a fifth location. Well, he may not have the best credit rating. It might take 6 months to try to get financing from the local bank if they can even get that. So we can turn around and give them a loan of like, say, $500K. They get their money right away. They're happy because now they can, you know, get that next restaurant up and running, start turning profit. But they're going to pay a premium for that capital, right? And typically they could be paying from 30-35%, you know, within like a 6-7 month time frame, right? So investors do really well by coming into this opportunity, and then the owners of the business do well, you know, again, because they get access to that capital. And then we're spread and diversified across many, you know, over 20 different industries transportation, you know, all kinds of different things. So, you know, we think that this area is going to be, you know, continue to accelerate. We're really excited about this private lending, and the return structure is very high, double digits, which is very impressive return structure, and continues to scale. And you can also, the other thing about this investment that's interesting is you can get so much velocity because these loans can be anywhere from, like I said, 2 to 7 months. So as soon as you get that capital back into the fund, it's redeployed on the next one. Right. So the compounding starts to, you know, really snowball. So I think that's a great sector. You know, probably, you know, a home run for us this year. I think that's super exciting. And then, you know, probably the worst thing, I don't know. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, fortunately, most of our opportunities have gone really well, like I said, by investing in the right team, investing in the right sectors. Probably my worst investment was actually investing in the Indian stock market about 20 years ago. And it was all simple stuff. I invested in something I didn't know anything about. My partner at the time was Indian, and he talked me, you know, into it, all of the merits, and the market was like really taking off at the time. But there were so many different complexities about, you know, internationally investing, getting your money back and fees and things. And, you know, I basically, you know, lost everything on that. So, you know, so the takeaways there for folks is just, you know, always invest in something that you understand, right? And invest in something that you know. And if you don't know anything about it, and then learn about the asset class, right? So you can be smarter, you know, make an informed decision.
So what do you say to investors who are maybe getting started, might have one or two, in a way that how they can position themselves better today so that in 5 years they're wanting to come back in time and shake their hand and thank them for what they've done?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really in my book, Adam, The Holistic Wealth Strategy, where we have five simple phases that investors can go through to really accelerate, you know, their wealth journey, right? And it has, you know, a couple of things, right? The first phase is all about mindset, right? And investing in yourself as an asset. So, you know, how can you really, you know, change the game and create your own chessboard that you want to do? The second phase goes into increasing your IQ. So getting smarter about different asset classes, whatever it is that you want to focus on and you think you can nail, if it's real estate or whatever section of real estate. And we also talk of this is a holistic approach, right? So we want to focus also on our health IQ and improving that, right? Because your health can either be taking you towards your goals or away from your goals. So really, you know, investing in those areas in yourself. And then we talk about creating an entire infrastructure around your wealth. So, you know, we all talk about returns and trying to get the best yield that we can on particular, you know, investment. But let's look at the biggest expense that you have, either in your business or your personal economy. It's taxes, number one. So do you have a proactive tax strategy that you're working with a top-notch CPA to aggressively mitigate your taxes? I fired 5 CPA firms over the years until I finally found the right one. And you know, that is just freeing up extra cash flow that you have to invest, right?
I want to pause you there for a second. You mentioned you fired 5 CPA firms. What led you to realize they weren't doing the best that they could do for you? Because that's one thing that a lot of investors come to me and ask about. They're like, I have a CPA. I don't know if they know this. So what were the warning signs to you that it was time to get out?
Well, I continually paid more and more in fees. I worked with more and more prestigious firms, and they all look at taxes in the rearview mirror. You give them all of your documents, and then they say, this is what you owe. And then they tell you that, by the way, you know, on March 15th or something, and then you've got a few weeks to pull out that capital, right? And, you know, as savvy investors, we know we don't want capital sitting around, right? That's being lazy. We want it to be efficient. So I think, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, as a business owner, you can be paying 20% or less in taxes. If you're an investor, if you're just investing in real estate, you could be paying zero in taxes, right? So I wish someone had told me that when I was 20, and then that would be the guiding what I'd be looking for. So if you are above those areas, then you have opportunity, right? And you need to change, you know, not only working with your CPA, but it's also like, it took me years to kind of, you know, work into that structure, because it came back to that education that we talked about in phase two. So I got a lot smarter about the taxes, and essentially the tax code is a roadmap of incentives for business owners and investors, but you need to understand how that works. Right. So that's another key step. And then also we help our clients also with infinite banking, which is a really sophisticated strategy that most, you know, ultra wealthy are used kind of as the cornerstone to their building wealth, where you can get tax free compounding. You can create a reverse income stream, tax free income stream in retirement. And also as an investor, you have access, you have a liquidity pool that you can build up. You can take the cash flow from your different investments, put it into this policy, and then loan against it when you get that right opportunity for you to go do the next deal. So it's a fantastic way to really get a multiplier on your money. So those are the first three phases. And then the fourth one, we talk about asset repositioning, because a lot of people really have low-hanging fruit, where they're not being as, you know, efficient as they can with their portfolio. They might have some legacy 401ks, or, you know, let's call it what it is. I mean, a lot of people have trapped equity in their primary residence. And what's the rate of return on equity in your house? Zero, right? So if you could redeploy that and put that into an investment, you know, you could be doing significantly better. Plus it supports, you know, your tax, you know, you increase your mortgage interest, right? So trying to look at these things, you know, from an end-to-end perspective. And then in our final phase, you know, it's all about taking action and really investing and not being in that analysis by paralysis, but taking action, getting into some of these investments, you know, what's right for you. And then you start to see these multiple streams of income, you know, just really compound and snowball. And if you look at the effects over the next 20 years, it's really substantial where you can get to.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us again. Dave is the founder and CEO of Pantheon Investments and author of The Holistic Wealth Strategy. There is a link here that you can see. If you're listening to this on the podcast, you can see it in the show notes to learn more about his book. That's at pantheoninvest.com/wealth-strategy. If you want to just check out his company, go to pantheoninvest.com. Dave, is there anything else you want to promote or leave our audience with today?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. You know, I think what I would share with folks is just, you know, understand that you are your greatest asset, right? And the biggest ROI I've ever had on an investment is investing in myself, whether that's my education, my health, my relationships, you know, things like that. So, you know, I encourage the audience to think about themselves in that way, right? So that you can start investing in yourself today to really capture that vision statement and living the life that you want to live.
All right. Thank you so much, Dave. Really appreciate it. If anyone is out there and interested in single family homes, you can head over to renttoretirement.com and see what we have to offer right there. And don't forget, if you are interested, I know it's getting late in the year, but if you're interested in the top 20 markets to invest in 2023, the report that Zach wrote, email podcasts@renttoretirement.com. That's podcasts@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourselves, and we'll talk to you on the next episode.